the north side of Chicago. It's the coolest bar in town. And if you go up there, you better just beware. You're gonna find a bunch of clowns. It's a mad, mad, crazy bar. The whole damn place is so bizarre. Full of all the vice and sin. I mean, where do we even begin?
That is the commercial radio world premiere of the theme song to one of the most intriguing new podcasts in the world. It's not just Chicago. You're doing it in Chicago. My guests, Bruce Elliott and Liz Garibay, are two dear old friends of mine. The podcast is called As the Alehouse Turns, because Bruce is the proprietor of the Alehouse.
The mascot.
I know, yeah, the mascot is now your operative word there. Liz and I are both longtime aficionados of the Alehouse. It is arguably the most famous saloon or tavern in Chicago, and that is the setting for this now 6-7 episode podcast. Why a podcast, Bruce Elliott?
Well, that
why not?
I didn't know what one was, but Liz is the one that thought it would be a great idea. And then she said she'd take care of everything. Everything would go well. That was about a year and a half ago,
but it's happened.
I'm busy.
It's happened,
everybody.
Well, you're busy doing work for Bruce's books and the blog. You too. One of the hallmarks of this show, and I have listened to all. Are there six or seven?
Seven.
Now? There are seven now. They are each about an hour long. They are provocative. They're intelligent. There are very few podcasts in this country on any given show where you will hear William Butler Yeats, and then a few minutes later, a story about Street Jimmy or a story about Roger Ebert. Your world is a full world, Liz. This is why you've known Bruce for a very long time, and you have a weird, not contentious, but kind of pleasantly friendly.
It's kind of contentious.
Well, I mean, you know, the Alehouse is one of those places where I started drinking as a young lass.
You're a child of Old Town.
I am. I am born and raised in Old Town, and then, you know, I moved away here and there, and then when I came back to Chicago permanently, I started going there on a more frequent basis, and that's how Bruce and I started to really kind of, you know, chit-chat some more and connect. And we have a very interesting relationship. Like I said, it changes on a daily basis.
Yep.
It changes on the moment.
Well, it changes on the podcast. It changes from minute to minute.
That's, you know, and the crazy thing about the podcast is, like, this is who we are. This is us.
Yeah.
This is, whether the mic is on or not, this is the way we talk to each other, which is why I think it's kind of special, you know? So one minute he can go from being that endearing father figure, the next minute he can be, it's true, you can be very protective of me. Sometimes, it's rare, but sometimes. Or he can go on and, you know, be that annoying brother or that needy child. Most often it's the dirty uncle, but it just is a very unique relationship, which I truly treasure.
One of the interesting things about podcasts, and I one of the reasons that yours is so good, I think most podcasts are simply, and anybody can do a podcast. You need a microphone and you need some kind of platform on which people can hear the thing. They're mostly, it's kind of, you know, to steal a title from Norman Mailer, it's kind of advertisements for myself. And though, in a way, it is kind of promotional for the Alehouse, it is also kind of, in a quiet way, promotional for the drinking tours you do, historyontap.com. It is so much more. It's topical. It's political.
Oh, yeah.
It's opinionated as hell. And that's, I think that's the joy of it for me.
We didn't start this, honestly, as any sort of advertisement. Like, that's not where it's rooted by any means.
No, of course not.
I you know, that's one of my biggest, I think, criticisms from many of my friends and family and such, is that I don't promote myself enough. But I wanted to do this just because it was something I really wanted to do with Bruce.
Yeah.
You know, plus blogs, I feel. He does his blog.
On one of the podcasts, there's a relatively contentious argument. Bruce has, with Geriatric Genius, is one of the most successful blogs that I know of in Chicago.
Yeah, it's right now we're breaking all records.
I'll bet you are, in part because of the suicide of your friend, Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah, and I'm afraid that's the reason, yeah.
And your disdain for his girlfriend, so to speak.
Yes.
But it is also something that Roger Ebert discovered, and that helped spread the word.
Well, Roger actually is the one that it was his idea have a blog. I didn't know what one was either. And Roger got my daughter, said, fix it up. So he just presses a couple buttons. And then Roger kind of coached me and plugged me. So that's really what got me started.
Liz, I know you're going to down, and one of the episodes features an argument about whether blogs time has come. But this podcast to me seems like a great extension, like the audio version of Bruce's blog. Am I nuts?
No, 100%. But I also feel like one of the reasons I really wanted to do the podcast was because there is a certain kind of magic of being a regular at the Ale House. You know, I keep coming back for certain reasons. You know, you go there for certain reasons.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's this interesting little dynamic that happens when you go there often and have these conversations with everyone. And I feel like they're very valuable, and I feel like that's kind of what I do with History on Tap, is really trying to give you the insider look of what happens in a bar. And so that's kind of why I really wanted to do the podcast. His blog is great. His blog is fantastic. He has all these followers. My only thing is that I honestly believe that kind of blogs are a thing of the past, so you have to move into, you know, new mediums. I started my whole career, this career that I've carved out for myself, I started that out as a blog too, but you know, I kind of moved on and to greener pastures and did different things, and so I kind of just wanted to help the old fella here.
Well, you're audio visual. You're not really an intellectual, and I don't think you really appreciate really good writing. So that's part of your generation.
He tries to compare himself to Dickens and Oliver. You know,
and Chaucer.
He talks to Oliver Twist and Dickens all the time, and Chaucer. Yeah, and Shakespeare.
Well,
and
actually,
those are apples and oranges. You are a great writer, but you know, whatever.
Well, but also one of the things that the podcast does too, and again, the podcast is As the Ale House Turns, is it does capture, for me, a person who loves the notion and the ambiance of taverns, what it is like to be in a tavern. It is recorded in a tavern. Even the last one had a bunch of loud guys.
Yeah, really very loud.
Yeah, it got very, very loud, but that's also what happens. It recreates, I think, the kind of conversations, not just between you two, but that go on between good tavern folks.
Oh, yeah, I think, and we're going to bring in more and more of our regulars. We've got some great ones coming up.
Well, you've had a couple on already.
Yes, we have. Well, one of them made sure that just texted Liz and said, under no circumstances, mention her name.
Right.
So, I don't know.
Well, she's mentioned in
the... I might shout it out.
Yeah.
Well, moving on. No, we had Andy.
Andy Shaw did
Andy
almost
Shaw
an hour on there.
He's emeritus at the BGA, so he was great.
It was funny, you guys, you and Andy are trying to figure out who the greatest... You both agreed that Royko was probably the greatest newspaper reporter, columnist.
By our lifetime.
Yeah. And you brought up one of Mike's famous lines, the "Where is mine?" as the new motto for Chicago. It is
in
"Ubi
Latin.
Est mea."
Is it
"Ubi Est mea"? And as I'm listening to the show, I go, "Man, that's Mike Royko." The other thing, the first episode, basically a lot of it is involved in the fascinating history of the Ale House, your friendship with Roger Ebert, the fact that you are, and one of the great things about you, Bruce, is you're wonderfully self-effacing sometimes, where you call yourself a variety of things, including one I love, the emeritus chick magnet.
Well, I just had my 78th birthday, so
that's when it happened. You became the emeritus.
It happened earlier, as I approached 70.
Wait, really? You stopped being a chick magnet at 70? At 69, you're still.
No, I'd say probably late 60s.
I am spending the next half hour with Bruce Elliott and Liz Garibay. They will tell you how to get, because I'm a little technologically idiotic about this stuff too, but the podcast is called As the Ale House Turns. We're also going to talk about Bruce's latest book, the third in his ongoing autobiography. It is called California Jailbreak, We'll also tell you a little bit more about Liz's ongoing beer focus tours and her getting very, very, very close to opening the Beerzeum, or what is it called?
Brewzeum, Chicago Brewzeum.
I don't drink beer. See, this is
you're a whiskey guy. I know.
You guys are both beer guys, and we'll talk about Bruce and have him define what is a Polish martini after a short commercial break. Rock and Roll Ruth is in here too, and she is one of the associate producers of the show, and we will discuss what that means.
And she's also living proof that I still am a chick magnet.
You sure are, man. You sure are. There's nothing emeritus about this relationship at all.
I don't have to fight them off anymore.
I remember when you did.
Rock and Roll Ruth is
a
saint.
Or just fight them. I mean, that was the other one. Just fight them. I got to tell you, Chicago's hosting the ultimate month-long food festival this August. Visit ctfoodball.com to get your seat at the table. We'll be right back. Bruce, you're pleased your third book is out. You talk about it a little on one of the later podcasts, the California Jailbreak. Liz Garibay is your
go-to girl.
Yeah,
go-to girl.
That's a good phrase. Because of some legal problems in the wonderful world of New York publishing, I've had to self-publish my books.
I remember I wrote about, and I'm going to write about this one too, and the podcast that, you know, initially, you know, Anthony Bourdain hooked you up with, you know, his publishing house. And they were very, very enthusiastic. And then all of a sudden, the lawyers got
well at the last minute. I mean, it took. He wanted to shape my blog into a book.
Yeah.
And after a good year and a half, a lot of work, a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of money went into just doing it. I had no idea how to do it, and they wanted 80,000 words. The last minute, the New York the lawyers at HarperCollins said it was the most libelous, defamatory book that ever crossed their and nixed it. And
which is saying something.
Which I don't understand. If Tony read your blogs, he must have known that this was going to happen.
See, that's why I feel I don't bear all the guilt.
Well, I remember you had to. I mean, you started getting releases from people.
Oh, like, sure.
The
lawyers at HarperCollins. I probably said a lot of inappropriate things to him.
I think
that's safe to assume.
That's kind of hard to believe.
Yeah.
You did have, and you were planning to have, guests on your podcast. You have had two so far that I can recall, and I've listened to the entire seven episodes.
You're on that list, Rick, by the way.
I'm on the list?
Oh, absolutely.
What about Rock and Roll Ruth?
I would love...
As an associate producer, is she in an executive capacity here, unable to...
I have been battling to have Rock and Roll Ruth on, Bruce's girlfriend, but he's very protective.
Well, I
don't blame him.
I have a confession to make. I have enemies.
Yeah,
and
indeed.
I think enemies might be very tempted. I mean, they could call me, you know, anything they want. I'm used to there's nothing really that they could say that offends me. I'm oblivious. But, they'll go after my daughter, and I'm sure that they would do that. So I think that probably a low profile is best for her.
Okay.
Until she really gets a bulletproof vest and thicker skin and everything. So,
is there any, I almost hesitate, is there any preparation involved before the show but to sit down on either side of a microphone and start talking? Do you two ever, in these first seven episodes?
Once in a while we'll say, hey, we should talk about this, and then we always forget.
Well, it's true. What's happened is, I mean, we do, interestingly enough, spend a lot of time together.
Sure.
At the bar, outside the bar, wherever. It is a curious little relationship. And so we'll have this banter no matter what, and sometimes one of us will say, hey, that could be something fun to talk about. And so now I've started to write things down.
Have you?
And sort of take note of it. But really, the only preparation comes while our dear sweet Jordan, executive producer, is setting everything up for us. And we're getting our drinks and getting our seats. And we start talking about, hey, what are we going to talk about right now?
See, one of the things about the two of you, Liz Garibay and Bruce Elliott, is you're marvelous conversationalists. And if you need proof, I know this from a lifelong of conversations, but all you need to do is listen to the podcast. You would go from the royal wedding to Prince Charles's ears to The Crown to Abra Prentice Anderson to the jukebox at one of the great ones. It goes from, I think it's show number 5. It goes from how famous the jukebox is at the Yale House, justifiably so, to you, Bruce Elliott, playing softball and teaching Bog Skaggs how to play
golf. No, his wife. Oh, yeah, him, golf, how to play his golf. Wife, baseball.
You met his wife.
Carmella, yeah. The late Carmella, right?
Yeah, some of his stories are, you know, honestly, even though they did happen, they're a little bit unbelievable. Like him playing on a softball league with the Grateful Dead.
There was a whole league out there.
I mean, right. Who does that?
Out in Marin County?
Yeah.
Divine Nine.
Well, then also on that particular episode, there's an encounter with Wilt Chamberlain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bruce Elliott has had.
I was a well-known heckler. Yeah. When I used to live in...
Oh, well, I'll bet you were.
In fact, it's just in this book. It goes into great detail. And I actually won a lawsuit when Butch von Bredekoff, at the time he was the coach of the New Orleans Jazz. He ran up in the stands and started pummeling me. But Wilt was really frightening because I heckled him for years, never even turned around. And then I just kind of brought up some... I was reviewing his new book, Wilt. And all of a sudden, he stepped across the bench, lifted me up. I mean, just with his arm fully extended, held me against the hockey glass. And then he uttered a few profanities and suggested I stop, which I did.
I bet you did.
In fact, Carmella Skaggs and my stepson, Eugene, were sitting next to me, and they both ran. They weren't there at all to help me.
He's a button pusher.
He is also. It's not like Zelig or something, but he has had encounters. Your life, Bruce, has drawn you into so many different interesting circles of sort of a darker element. And the book, which I'm halfway through because I just got it yesterday. You know, there you are at the Black Panthers. You're meeting Black Panthers. You're running into Eugene McCarthy in the hallway.
There's a campus, walking across the campus, University of California in 68. Yeah.
And then you are going to drive back to Chicago at one point with Eddie Belchowski, the one-armed heroin addict painter and a friend of my mother's. Do you ever think, and Liz, you must appreciate the kind of raucous... an interesting life that Mr. Elliott
had. I feel like that's, don't take this the wrong way, Bruce. I feel like that's why I'm attracted to him. He'll completely take that out of context.
I've heard those conversations. Oh, yeah.
You can probably tell right now there's sexual tension.
Yes, it's all over the brand new studios of WCN.
When I first met Bruce, obviously I was very much the bar itself, the environment, is what really appealed to me. I'm that's who I am. That's the environment that I like. And the minute I met Bruce, you know, it's sort of like I knew he was the one. Yeah, I know he was my guy.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I knew there was an instant connection. And it was because of these stories and his appreciation for history. And truly, it was really also about his appreciation and his ability to be a great storyteller, which is something I completely value because that's what I try to do in my work, too.
Yeah. Bruce, have you gotten better? I mean, I remember conversations with you over the last maybe 30, even 40 years. How has it changed putting conversations on the page as you have in the so far three volumes of your autobiography? You don't seem to hold anything back on the page, but there's a more sort of formal structure to it.
No, I do hold back.
Do you?
I have to hold back, yeah. And I don't get punched in the face nearly as much anymore either.
And Will Chamberlain's dead, I think.
Well, he didn't. He just, yeah, he was very.
But just to be lifted off the ground by Will Chamberlain is pretty intimidating.
I'm telling you, he just held me right up against like a little rag doll against the hockey glass. It was disturbing.
But so you check yourself a little more in your
When I write, I have, you know, especially after that incident with the HarperCollins lawyers.
Yeah.
You know, you have to. So, I think I probably hold myself back a little.
You don't seem to on the podcast. Liz, what's your impression?
Well, I have a big job on that podcast. I got to control the guy. You know,
is that how you see your role? I mean, you see yourself. Well, no. You're obviously driving the show, as they say in the business. You're driving the show.
We have our conversation, but you know, you gotta keep him in check. You gotta tell him when you kind of have to give him the signals when to stop talking about something that's inappropriate. You gotta, you know, sort of just make him go towards a different path.
She keeps coming up with disclaimers.
Yeah, he talks about stuff that I don't necessarily. Those are not my opinions. I don't want to get in trouble.
No, you do say that often. I remember one of the first episodes. There was it started as a recap of the week at the bar, and then went off into Walter Jacobson.
Oh,
how
God,
Walter
yeah.
Jacobson was called Skippy, and how the
players. Remember how Rucker used to write about the players throwing jockstraps at him in the locker room when he was a bat boy.
Yeah. And then about his pedophile brother, and then Larry. Street Jimmy, and how you really want, as a guest, Michael Shannon. That's who you'd love to have on, because Michael is Michael's a good guy, and he loves the Ale House, and he's an interesting person. And he's, for all his stardom, he remains a kind of tavern guy.
Well, Rock and Roll Ruth is the one that got that viral photo of him watching the Oscars, watching his picture, win best... a picture, and I said, take that picture. And he's sitting there with the jukebox on, subtitles.
And a drink. Yeah.
A few drinks.
Well, we're going to tell you after the news how to get a hold of As the Ale House Turns. Liz will know how to do that, because I don't know. You can. I suppose you could Google it and it'll show up. You know, Ben, let's give people a sample of what the podcast sounds like. Ben, who has not listened to all 7 hours as I have, has picked out a couple segments. Let's hear one.
It took a minute because I really do have a lot going on this year, which we'll actually talk about toward the end of the podcast. But no matter, the book is out.
Well, it's my best book.
Thus far.
Well, I get better each book. Each book is better than it's hard to believe that after they're all good, but I get better with each book.
Well, I just, you know, I'm looking forward to reading it and looking forward to admiring my hard work every time I pick it up and see it on the shelf. And every time someone goes to the bar and purchases it, I'm just going to pat myself on the back.
You should.
All right, good. But a lot of people made that happen, so we're excited that now you have the trilogy. And you said it's already selling, right?
Yeah.
People are buying it.
Yeah.
You can find it on Amazon. If you type in California Jailbreak or Bruce Cameron Elliott.
And it covers the years 1967 to 76 when I had to leave Chicago in a hurry. And I ended up out of a pure happen chance going to the University of California. And then after I graduated from University of California, I moved from Berkeley to Marin County, I lived in a strange little town called Forest Mills, where all hell was breaking loose.
Well, as soon as I finish your second book,
Well, we're not going to hold our breath on that.
We're back. That was a sample of As the Ale House Turns, the Bruce Elliott, Liz Garibay collaboration on a podcast. How do people get that? All I did, I think, Liz, was Google As the Ale House Turns, Garibay and Elliott, and it came up, and I was able to start listening to the whole.
Yeah, if you, it's available on SoundCloud and on iTunes, and if you have any sort of podcast subscription app on your phone, you can type it in, and it will download to your phone, and it will also give you a nice little notification whenever a new episode is up.
How many people are listening? Do you know, Bruce? Have people come in the bar?
It's kind of a mystery because Liz is,
everything's always my fault, Rick.
Well, certainly. I mean, we're not expecting me to figure it out.
We don't have books out because of me. You don't have a blog because of me. You don't have all these, this podcast because of me. It's all my fault always.
Well, any technological shortcomings are your fault. They're certainly not mine.
We're not really sure because, honestly, I love doing this just because it's fun, but
Fun to listen to too. It really is.
It's a good time. All the data and those are not really my priority, so I don't go digging for it. But you know what? After people have been asking about it, so I'm going to go take the time and I will find out how many people are listening to it. I know that on SoundCloud it actually will show you the number of plays, and I think we've got about 1,000 or so on SoundCloud.
That's not bad.
I don't know about iTunes. I haven't dug that up, but
It's only been out for a couple of weeks because
yeah
we. bunched a whole lot.
We recorded about five in a row first.
Right.
Before we released them all. Yeah.
And now, do you want people to come watch you? I mean, that's a strange thing, but do you want people... Do you want an audience? Remember when we did, when I did a WBZ live broadcast from there? I thought it was very cool to have people around. Do you guys feel the same way?
Well, there's really not room. I mean, the bar is usually pretty packed over here.
Yeah, you're right. So, you're right.
I mean, if people want to come in and stare at us,
there's not sure.
Why not?
Yeah.
You should, and you can also buy the books in there, too.
You can go to Amazon.com to get the books. It was really important for me to do it in that environment.
It's a total Bruce Elliott experience, man. You get the podcast and the books.
Yeah, actually, now that you mentioned it.
And that's why we battled. Like, you know, he thought I should be able to just figure out how to do this podcast in a heartbeat. I listen to podcasts. I certainly don't know how to produce them, which is why it was so imperative for me to find someone who did.
You found
Thank
this guy,
God,
Jordan.
Found Jordan, yes. Well,
we'd be dead without Jordan.
Yeah, you know, and we were able to figure out equipment and things, so we got the right mics to be able to have that ambient sound.
Where in the bar do you do this?
So if you walk in the bar and to the left, there is a booth.
Yes.
Up in the window.
Up in the window, and that's where we are.
That's great. That booth's going to be famous. There's going to be a plaque. I'm serious.
Well, it was famous for Gilda Radner before, so I'm happy to, you know, step into her shoes.
Are you two having fun doing this?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
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 Except when he, you know, tells me that I'm not doing my job or something.
Well, but you're not. I hold you to a high standard.
When Bruce was talking in one of the podcasts about the fact that he's rarely had a what one would call a conventional job in your life, and how he, in his old days...
Well, I never had a full-time job ever. I had a part-time cab job.
When he was a full-time, not emeritus, chick magnet. One of the great lines in the seven podcasts I've seen, and part of it is because of the delivery that you give. It was... There's nothing sexier than seeing a woman coming home from work.
And there isn't really. I mean, there is not. I can't hardly describe
your feeling.
The feeling.
And the emotions coursing through you when someone has come home from work with a pay. And in those days, with a real paycheck in their hands, I suppose.
That's very important.
Now, are you really going to teach one of the podcasts? There's some discussion of how difficult a game golf can be, and Liz was saying, "Well, I'll be able to. I'm a pretty athletic person. I'll be able to."
This is actually happening tomorrow.
It is.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I've got a light week because of the holiday, and so I'm going to go to his house to fix all the crap he needs fixing, and then we're going to go out to Jackson Park and so, I don't know. He's going to give me a lesson.
There.
Yeah.
And what do you expect, Mr. Elliott?
Well, I've got her a wonderful set of short girl clubs.
Okay.
So the clubs are top-notch. And
and that's half the battle. Yeah, okay. Equipment's
important.
Yeah.
And we'll just see if she's coachable. I'm not expecting a great deal. I think that's probably wise on my part.
I think I'm going to go out there and rock it.
But you'll hear stories out there, too, as you did on the podcast, about Bruce playing Jackson Park with a variety of characters, and on the podcast with Barack Obama.
Yeah, Barack used to come out and play after he got done with his law class. He used to come out and play a few holes, and because my golf game really suffered after I had a child, so I couldn't, you know, so I could just snatch a little golf after she got home from school. So he would jump over and play in with me, you know, so we never got a full rounded. But, yeah, for almost the entire autumn one time.
And on the podcast, one of your regrets, and I've rarely seen you voice regrets about anything.
Oh, I have some.
I know you do, but I've rarely heard you voice them. But it was not asking Barack Obama what he thought of Jesse.
Well, there was several prominent black politicians that were I used to play with out there knew, and plus there was just guys in the know. And when they found out I had been playing for the last couple months with, you know, little few pickup holes with Barack, they asked me, "What did he say about Jesse?" And I, oh my God, why didn't I ask? Because he might have told me, you know, at that time.
Yeah, I don't think he'd tell you now.
Oh.
What do you think? You two are real Chicagoans, and you now, Bruce, are living in Hyde Park. What do you think of the Obama Center, Liz Garibay and Bruce Elliott? What are you, have any thoughts about that? What that's going I don't want Tiger Woods building some world-class golf course down there. Combining South Shore and Jackson Park.
No, it's a horrible idea.
What about the center?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, that part, I think it's a great idea. I'm just worried about the design. I mean, all the architectural renderings I've seen,
Yeah.
In fact, Andy Shaw's daughter's coming to town and
working there.
But I think it'll be, and of course, you know, there's always going to be neighborhood people that are going to be mad because they're going to think that it's going to gentrify. Well, it's going to gentrify the neighborhood, but that's the whole Hyde Park area is being gentrified. So that's inevitable. I just hope architecturally, and instead of making it worry about having play places and stuff, just make it a serious, pretty. It's beautiful, right next to Wooded Island.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It's a gorgeous area, underutilized.
No question.
I go by there every day, and there's not that many people using it.
Yeah.
I'm excited about it.
Are you? You think it'll be good?
I think it's going to be a great addition to the area. I think it's a necessary addition to the area. And, you know, let's be honest. It's Brock, right?
Do you think it'll do business at the Cove, which is one of the great neighborhoods?
Hang on. Let's not mention let's keep that on the down low because it's sort of one of those places where
they're going to find it.
I know. It's my favorite bar in Hyde Park.
It's one of the great bars in the city. You know why? Because it's a tavern.
Yeah.
Oh, these are definite taverns still over there. Jimmy's.
In fact, whenever Bruce makes me go down to Hyde Park, journey down. I have to pack a lunch just for the bus ride. And then I meet him there.
What are your aspirations for the podcast? To continue having fun? I mean, it is very difficult. You're not going to go out and get sponsors, I don't think. You know, it's also to help spread the word of the Bruseum once that, and it maybe happen this fall. The beer
we
museum.
We're still working on a location, but we have an opportunity to open an exhibition at a major cultural institution here in the city
in the fall.
In the fall, yeah, in October. You're going to be seeing a lot more Bruseum things in the next, I would say, even the next couple of weeks.
Wow, that's great.
Pretty exciting. I think I keep saying it's a year of the Bruseum. We have so many things happening, and we're really trying to get the whole city excited about it. And we have this really great plan for that to happen, and that's why you're going to be seeing a lot of things. But yes, in the fall, we're going to have an exhibition open at a major museum, and then that will lead into this two-year initiative we're working on and then open our doors. So, of course, I would love for this to be a great platform for the Bruseum. But honestly, like I said, this is all about me and Bruce and our relationship and sort of just having a little fun with what we know how to do, which is talk and drink at a bar.
You two are two of my favorite people. Look for a story in the Tribune in the next couple of weeks about expanding on what we've talked about tonight as the Ale House turns. I'm fascinated with the podcast world. And this one is certainly in my top 10. There's some good ones out there, but most of them out there are just like people getting on saying, hey, like I'm Rick Kogan, and I think that it's like really hot out today, and I'm going to play a song. You two are two of the most creative and interesting and provocative people I know, and I adore you both. You too, Ruth. You too.
Feeling is mutual.
Thank you.
Anytime. Right. And Bruce was we used to have a wonderful show around the holiday time with featuring Bruce Elliott, Jeff McGill, the longtime bartender at the Billy Goat Tavern, and Colin Cordwell, the proprietor of the Red Lion Pub.
We were talking about
the meaning of taverns, and those were some important shows. So listen to the podcast. It is called As the Ale House Turns. You can find it on Spotify, on iTunes, Bruce's latest book, and I would recommend having done it, reading them in order. California Jailbreak is the third in his ongoing series of autobiographical works. What's the next one?
Fraud and Deception is when I arrived back in Chicago.
See, that's a rocket.
76.
Well, that's some rocket stuff.
He's already on there. Me to help him start the formatting for all that business.
Yeah, tomorrow.
Yes. Keep my mother and the Kogan family out of that one. Except you really liked my father.
Yes, I did. I liked your mom, too.
Yeah, I know. She was good people.
I caught her. She almost went over a cliff at Roger Ebert's place in Harvard.
She was going backwards like this.
And that
doesn't surprise me. but they were good people. They were good people, and they raised me right, and they raised me in Old Town just like Liz.